Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
I rode with him. I know what an idiot this guy is.
Pedro Fernandez.
Hey, Pedro, how you doing? And good evening to everybody out there listening to the show.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, emanating, coming at you from the multi-multi-million-dollar Sports Byline Studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Often imitated but hardly duplicated, 37 to make death, 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am your ever so modest host. When I say modestly, capital, straight up, I'm a four-time Golden Glove champion and an award-winning writer. So supposedly, allegedly, I'm supposed to know something about boxing. But guess what? I've always found out the average fan may know a little bit more. So I open up the toll-free at the top of each hour and give you the opportunity to impart if you'd like. The number, 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. That's the listener line. Of course, you can text us here in the studio. That number, 415-275-1613. The text line here, once again in the studio, 415-275-1613. Well, David Benavidez, what can I say? We'll talk about that in depth. Of course, the number one challenger to Canelo Alvarez, the undefeated, I take that back, the once-beaten world champion, 168 pounds. Undefeated Benavidez last night rolling over Kyrone Davis. Was supposed to do that, but we've got some questions about Mr. David Benavidez. And of course, I talked to some significant people in the world of boxing this morning, and they all say the same thing. He has no footwork. And if you have no footwork, you're not the complete deal. Bottom line is some people think he can be tweaked. Other people think he's just a limited commodity. Straight up, we'll find out that and more today on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. We expect the retired HBO Godfather at about 20 minutes past the hour. I'm talking about Mr. Larry Merchant. That and more today on Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, of course, Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel, WBC TV and Veev TV. We got it all going on. This is Ring Talk.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Nothing new in the Sports Byline Studios except for the foul. You know, the Twitch.tv thing crashed again. I am so tired of Twitch.tv, I'm going to say this live on the air. It's the worst streaming system I've ever been in contact with in my entire life. It crashes all the time. The audio doesn't work half the time. The bottom line is Twitch to me has been an entire waste of time. Bottom line is we're trying to do things with Veev TV, and hopefully this show will end up on Veev TV this week as part of WBC TV. Who am I? Once again, my name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to Ring Talk Live World. Welcome to your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. A little bit later, we'll hear from David Benavidez, of course, last night, a winner over Mr. Davis. And, you know, and I didn't mean to knock a Kyrone Davis. I mean, he really came, and he was fighting a guy that was better than him, and he was fighting a guy that was bigger and better than him. And the bottom line is, you know, the odds were stacked against him. It was sort of like taking on a guy that he wasn't going to win the fight no matter. Maybe if he had three hands, maybe four hands, he might have won the fight. I mean, David Benavidez is an explosive puncher. He's a punishing guy. Of course, he doesn't really get you out there with one shot, but he throws his punches together and puts them in bunches. And, of course, Mr. Davis last night, Kyrone, I give him props. I mean, he was a brave guy. There was no doubt about it. And whatever he made, it wasn't enough money. Of course, now David Benavidez, 25-0, 21 KO, 22 KOs. Of course, Mr. Davis dropping to 16-3 now. One draw with six KOs, of course, coming to us. The fight came to us from Phoenix, Arizona. It was a very pro Benavidez crowd, no doubt about that. I mean, that's where he's from, Arizona, no doubt, you know. So it was a pro Benavidez crowd. But the man in the background is the king of boxing. I'm talking about Canelo Alvarez. That's what everybody was talking about. Benavidez and Canelo Alvarez. Benavidez and Canelo Alvarez. Well, I talked with a few boxing experts this morning. Hector Martinez was talking about the bad footwork of Mr. Benavidez. And then I called Eddie Croft. And what did Eddie Croft? First thing out of Eddie Croft's mouth, Eddie Croft, one of the best trainers pound for pound in the world. In fact, he'll be in the studios next week with one of his guys. Or maybe I'll have him bring one of his kids in here. I'm talking about one of his children. Instead of having bring one of those fighters down here, having bring one of those children with them. Anyway, bottom line is Eddie Croft will be probably in studio next week. But Eddie said that the footwork was so lame that he could just see Canelo just rolling all over him. It's like a one-sided fight. Because if you can't put your entire package together, you're in trouble. And that's what Benavidez, I mean, Benavidez can punch, you know, he can, not the one punch power, but he puts them together. He can get people out of there. There's no doubt about it. I mean, 22 KOs and 25 wins, and he's fought some good guys, some decent guys. He's held the WBC super middleweight title before losing it on the scale, I believe. But the bottom line is, you know, Eddie questions his conditioning. And I thought that, well, you know, why would you question his conditioning? Eddie thought he looked soft. Eddie said he isn't going through the he's going through the motions. He's not really training. In other words, you know, I know what that's about because I've tried to train guys. And when you try to train guys, you can't get them to do what you want to do or do what you did. In other words, when I was training guys for the Golden Gloves, for amateurs, the amateur fights and this and that, I tried to put them through the same rigmarole that I went through, that Hector and I went through as growing up as kids. And, you know, that means running the lake and running mountains and that kind of good stuff and sprints and jump rope. And I mean, just absolutely being fanatical about it because you wanted to be in the very best condition. It was all about conditioning. This is all about conditioning. I remember the first time I lost that first fight with Eddie Smith at the Boys Club in South City. I think it was 1973, 74, somewhere around there. But my mother, she it was the only fight she ever watched in full. And she said to me, she said, you're not going to embarrass me. I said, embarrass you? What are you talking about? She goes, you got tired. I said, Mom, embarrass you because I got tired? She goes, no, you're not going to embarrass me. You're not going to embarrass yourself. If you want to box, you're going to have to be like 300% into this. You're going to have to run, and run some more. Because I wasn't a big guy on running before that, okay? But after that fight, I did. And, of course, Mom was my running coach, and she would run me up Westboro Boulevard in South City, which is like straight up. And then you like sprint like about three-quarters of a mile over to the 7-Eleven, half a mile over to the 7-Eleven. The bottom line is it was a hell of a run. So when I had guys that I wanted to develop as amateur fighters, and one guy is a pro, I said to him, this is what we're going to do. And they say, okay. And they all say, okay, until they see it, until they're faced with the mountain, until they're faced with Westboro Boulevard. Once they get there, it's sort of like they wilt. They will. The only one that was able to run that hill and win a Golden Glove title, besides Hector and myself, was Lenny Albert. He did it, okay? All the other guys that ran that hill and fought in the Golden Gloves and didn't make the hill failed. I'm not trying to say the hill was some measure of conditioning or some measure of greatness or anything like that, but you knew when you made it to the top under 12 minutes, you made it to the top of the hill and under 12 minutes, starting at Junior Becerra and Arroyo, you knew if you made it to that point that you were in solid condition and you were confident. And I remember what Alexis Arguello told me in 1982. I said, because I had lost a 3-2 split decision, I think I got robbed. Anyway, against Mike Christie and the Golden Gloves. And I said, whoa, you know, 3-2 decision. It was even after three rounds. I won the first two rounds, and they took away a point in each round. So, in other words, I didn't win those rounds because they took the points away. Okay, so after the fight was over, after three rounds, the fight was even. Judges went with Mike Christie 3-2. I learned from that. Believe me, I learned from that. It was the roughest thing. That was one of the roughest experiences I ever suffered as a fighter because I had won the fight. I had clearly won the fight, but, you know, the other guy won, and you can't knock Mike Christie for winning because the judges gave it to him. It was a decision the judges made after three rounds when they found a fight that was dead even on the scorecards. They said, well, we can go to the other guy. And they went to the other guy. Anyway, bottom line is, big learning lesson, no doubt about that. But later that year, I inquired Alexis Arguello, who will be hearing from in hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide today, going back in time with Alexis on CBS TV. But Alexis, he said to me, I said, how do you know when you're in the best physical condition? How do you know when you're in the best mental condition? I said, physical condition, you sort of know, you know, because you're kicking ass in the gym and you're running good times and that kind of good stuff. So you know what time it is. But how do you know when you're in the best mental condition? And Alexis looked straight at me. He said, you know when you'll be in the best mental condition when you're in the best physical condition. I said, come again? He said, you heard me. I said, you'll be in the best mental condition when you've achieved physical conditioning far beyond anything of the norm. In other words, you've got to feel it deep down in your soul. You've got to know you're in shape. You've got to know you're ready. You've got to have confidence. confidence? I never lacked on confidence, no doubt about that. A little ability I lacked on, but I didn't lack on confidence. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it, your inside look into the world of boxing, MMA. Of course, Larry Merchant will come up in a couple of minutes here on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, the retired HBO godfather. Big fights last night. We'll talk about Munguia, of course, was in action as well. Jaime Munguia, the number one ranked middleweight contender. We'll talk about that and more today on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Little Tower of Power instrumental to the break.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
Having once met the Godfather of Soul, was on stage with him for about 10 seconds there in Oakland, California. I can say that he was one of the rudest guys I've ever met in my life. But the bottom line is, that is the Godfather of Soul. The retired HBO Godfather could be nothing more to the contrary. He's the most polite man I've ever come in contact with, of course, unless we're talking boxing. Straight up, I'm talking about Larry Merchant. Godfather, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. We've got another poo-perfect day in Santa Monica.
Santa Monica, California. At the beach?
I'm not at the beach. I'm overlooking the beach where I live. I can see Catalina Island from here. And we've had a spate of just beautiful, beautiful Southern California weather.
Okay. Did you happen to catch David Benavidez last night?
Yes, I did.
Okay. All the criticism that's coming in this morning from the various boxing experts, a couple of trainers and things like that, was that he has no footwork. With no footwork, you're not going to be able to beat Canelo. You want to comment on that?
I think he's a good fighter, but that critique sounds real. But some guys can not have good footwork or not have good power, and they find ways to win.
That's true. He's 25 and zip, 22 KOs, of course. The young man that fought him came in as the opponent. But, you know, you can't say enough about bravery in boxing, Larry. I mean, there was a couple times there, if I was the other guy, I think I would have wanted to get out of there.
Which fight was that?
I'm talking about David Benavidez, the young man, Keyshawn. I mean, there was a couple times there, if I was the other guy, I think I would have wanted to be out. I wouldn't, you know.
Yeah, well, that's why that's what they signed up for, and some of them can make it through, and some of them decide they're in the wrong line of work.
I remember with Victor Ortiz, when I interviewed Victor Ortiz after he won a fight in San Jose, California, I think you were there, and he said to me, you know, I don't know if I'm into this. I said, what do you mean? He goes, look at these bruises on my face. I don't know if I'm into this. Of course, he never really matured. His claim to fame was getting sucker punched by Floyd Mayweather.
Tell me something, Pedro. I believe I watched three fights last night.
Yeah.
From three different locations.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Benavidez fight was in Phoenix.
Yep.
And then I watched the kid from Mexico with such a great record, Munguia.
Jaime Munguia, former 154-pound title holder, now campaigning at 160 pounds.
Yeah, and I thought he looked pretty darn good in that fight. What was the other fight? I can't remember.
Kiko Martinez stopping Kid Galahad. Kid Galahad was like they told me he was like a 20-1 favorite. Guess the oddsmakers choked on that one.
What weight?
I think that was 126 pounds.
No, that wasn't. That's not the one I'm talking about. But there were three fights on last night at three different locations. One, Anaheim, Phoenix. I'm trying to figure out the other one, and they were all sellouts on the same night.
you know, and that's a good thing for the sport. I think that the end of the pandemic, and yes, the pandemic does appear to be ending. Less people seem to be getting sick. Thank goodness for the vaccination, that kind of good stuff. I'll be getting my booster in the next week. But it looks like we've sort of turned the tide on the pandemic, and people are coming out. And because, I mean, people are all over. You're in Southern California. I'm in Northern California. They're still wearing their masks up here. Their masks up here, but they're outside.
Yeah.
They're going places.
Well, look, things are inching forward, I think, rather than backward. And boxing seems to be picking up. We're going to finally get another chance to see Terrence Crawford soon. And there are a number of fights that don't involve Canelo. For a while, it looks like the only fights I could get myself worked into were the heavyweight fights and Canelo.
You know, I'm going to comment on Mr. Crawford. Of course, a champion, 135 pounds, 140 pounds, 147 pounds. Now the WBO title holder, considered maybe one A or one B to Errol Spence. You know, I was with him a few years ago on a cruise. I think we were in Cuba, somewhere in the Bahamas. And I said to him, I said, you know, what do you want to do in boxing? I said, you want to keep going on like just beating guys? And because, I mean, he has numbers, but he has no great names on his resume, none whatsoever, not even anybody even coming relatively close to being great. And he said to me, I want to be like the great fighters, like Hagler, like Leonard, like Duran and people like that. Well, if he really wanted to be like those guys, he would have taken 5% less and fought Errol Spence in the 50-50 split, correct?
Yeah, but, you know, we have difficulties with promoters and everybody promising you this and don't take that fight because it might deter you on your road to vast riches. It's just the new normal. But if the new normal is also three television fights on a weekend involving elite fighters or would-be elite fighters,
mm-hmm.
I'll take it.
No doubt about that. Now, the heavyweight championship, of course, Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua, that was going to be like a mega, 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 mega match. And, of course, talking sort of curtailed that because, you know, Anthony Joshua wanted to make some more money with DAZN instead of his last fight with Sky Sports. Now we've got the 135-pound champion, and I've got some problems with him, Teofimo Lopez, undefeated, of course, going to go, I believe, in a week against George Kambosos of Australia. But now he's going to move straight up to 140 pounds after this fight, and he's not really I got a problem with him calling him the undisputed lightweight champion, even though he beat Vasyl Lomachenko, because he hasn't beat anybody else at 135. And in order to be the king at 135, you got to sort of like slay the division, not just one guy.
Well, I would agree with you. But that's the way he wants to roll, and we'll see if he's got any real role in him to move up a class.
You know, he's not the biggest guy in the world to begin with. I mean, he's not a tall guy, and he's not a big buff guy, and I thought 135 pounds. I was looking at his body one day and saying maybe he could make 130, but no way 130. He says 135 is a problem, and I could see that, but, you know, there's Devin Haney, there's Ryan Garcia, there's a couple other guys at 135 pounds that he has talked all this smack about. I mean, Teofimo has a big mouth. He's very vocal. But unlike some of the other guys with big mouths, he isn't stepping up. He seems to be avoiding guys and wanting to go to 140 and Luke Campbell.
Tell me something. I'm trying to think of some junior welterweights. Maybe he thinks this is an easier group here because the junior welterweight champions all moved up to welterweight.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I assume his handlers are closer to that than I am, and we'll see if he has some success there.
Okay, but back to Crawford, Omaha, Nebraska. Not a guy that sells tickets. If he held a fight in Omaha, maybe he could sell 5,000 seats at like $10 a ticket.
No, he sells more than that. Please,
does
don't,
he?
Don't underestimate him. I agree with everything, but he's drawn crowds of 12,000 and 13,000 okay. in Omaha.
I sound correct.
I guess he's made some pretty good money. Otherwise, he would be looking for more dangerous fights.
Dangerous fights. Good point. Mikey Garcia, they paid him like almost $2 million. Al Haymon did to sit on the fence there and not fight after sitting out that contract with Top Rank. His money is, I mean, there seems to be a lot of guys like the Charlo brothers. Al Haymon's given them a lot of money, and Charlo doesn't seem to want to step up and take on Canelo Alvarez or go to attain greatness or anything like that.
He isn't.
It doesn't seem like he's eager at all to move up to 168. I mean, every time we talk about 168 pounds, he's talking about Canelo coming down to 162 or 160. This and you don't tell the king what to do when you fight the king.
It's true that. And last week, Plant fought him, gave him a good fight for most of the fight. And walked away with a $10 million purse. Now, that ain't so bad.
No, that ain't so bad whatsoever. Larry, somebody asked me the other day, what makes a good trainer? I thought that, I mean, the obvious, like Eddie Futch and Angelo Dundee and guys like that. But what do you think is the main attribute of a good trainer, a boxing trainer?
Look, I think that there are a lot of good boxing trainers who have different approaches to the game. What makes a good trainer is good fighters, and what makes good fighters are good trainers. And I don't know the trainers today as well as I did once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. But the great trainers were great communicators, both with the media and with the fighter. And I know that Angelo Dundee was one of my favorites, and he talked about that you couldn't tell Ali what to do, but you can drop hints. And he could take credit for it.
Okay.
And so he knew his fighters. So you got to know these guys.
You know, I sat with an Angelo and did a one-hour show with him and his wife, and I called his wife by the wrong name for the entire hour. They didn't correct me till afterwards. I'm thinking if I did that with you and the godmama, she'd correct me. It was a little bit quicker than an hour.
Yeah, well, she would hear it right through the walls.
Emmanuel Stewart. God, I miss him. I really do. I mean, was he the most astute broadcast partner you think you worked with as far as knowing boxing?
Astute, yes. There's no doubt about it. And by the way, I had a conversation with Jim Lampley yesterday. Jim is a journalism instructor at the University of North Carolina, his alma mater.
Back at the Tar Heels.
Yeah, and he was telling me how he thought that Tyson Fury was just a big flabby bum who would be taken down and never become a champion. And Angelo corrected him in every way that's turned out to be true.
Wow.
About. And so there are guys, they see things that others may not, and they know how to work to treat that. And there are only a few handful of great fighters, there's only a few handful of
great trainers. Great. Godfather, all the best. Kiss the godmama. We'll talk soon.
Have a good day.
The great Larry Merchant. Notice he wouldn't kiss the godmama for me, but he said, have a good day. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Often imitated, but never duplicated.
Baby, 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 I got the feeling, baby.
listening to Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez, brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC, right here on Sports Byline.
You got to funkify. I was supposed to funkify in Mexico City for the next week. I was supposed to be down there for the WBC convention, but Uncle Sam had a holiday this week, and I didn't have a passport. What am I trying to tell you is I let my passport expire. I didn't realize the last one they gave me was only a year, some provisional passport they gave me because I lost the passport before. So they thought I was selling my passport, I think, overseas or something like that. Anyway, the bottom line is they gave me a one-year provisional passport, and I didn't realize that. So when I went to pull out the passport a few days ago to check it, you know, to get ready to go to Mexico, I realized it was expired. So I called the feds, and they say, you know, come on down. So I went on down. We don't take walk-ins. Wait a second. You told me to come on down. So bottom line was I ended up going through all these shenanigans, this and that. I ended up telling them my relative was dying in Mexico, all kinds of crazy stuff. And they still didn't let me go. So I guess, you know, the passport, it wasn't meant to be. But the bottom line is the WBC and its president, the Honorable Mauricio Sulaiman, of course, son of Don Jose Sulaiman, the founder of the WBC, they are holding their annual convention this week in Mexico City. And the reason why this is significant, because last year's convention didn't take place because of COVID. So this is the first year the convention is taking place after COVID. And of course, well, we wish them the very best luck. I wish I was down there. I'm not down there, and I'm still a little upset about that. But the bottom line is we have to move on. Last night, the unbeaten WBC and WBA 160-pound challenger, the number one ranked guy. I'm talking about Jaime Munguia of Mexico, 38-0 now, 30 KOs. A 12-round impressive winner, of course, over Gabriel Rosado. Let me get you these scores. Rosado's 25-13 now, one draw, 15 KOs. Rosado was a guy that nobody was giving any rounds to at all. I mean, he didn't get no – put it this way – he didn't get much credit at all. The scores were 118-110, 119-109, and 117-111. And most people, I thought, might have thought maybe Munguia won the fight, but not by scores like that. And when you do things like that, it's demoralizing for a fighter because you're in the fight. You know you're in the fight, and yet those judges don't have you in the fight because they can't conceive you possibly winning rounds. Are you, I mean, this is not part of the script. The other guy's so overly, so highly heralded that you have no chance. So if you have no chance, how can you win rounds? So the judges psychologically get trained to just vote for the guy that's supposed to win. Maybe that's what happened here last night. Of course, that took place at the Honda Center in Anaheim, California. I will say this, Rosado was, he had a lot of four-letter words to say after the fight. More power to him, but I think he had to say it. Of course, we have David Benavidez stopping of he wants to fight Canelo Alvarez. We'll talk about that. 25-0, 22 KOs. Of course, the young man that he fought, Kyron Davis, we'll hear from the David Benavidez in hour number two, but he was a game guy. He really was. He came in outgunned, and I can't say this enough because I've never been in a fight like that. In other words, you go into a fight and you're facing certain doom, certain loss. Even when I fought the guys that I wasn't supposed to beat, I didn't think about it that way. I just never thought about it that way. I didn't go into a fight thinking, man, you know, I'm going to get crunched here. And there's probably no other way that Mr. Davis could have looked at this other than, you know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for me. I can't punch. I'm a decent boxer. I'm tough. But the bottom line is I'm probably not going to win this fight. He didn't win this fight. Seventh-round TKO over the late substitute Kyron Davis. Of course, that was in Phoenix, Arizona. Now, as far as Benavidez and Canelo is concerned, ain't happening. I mean, I thought that maybe before this fight that he was a guy that they were going to be able to develop into a fighter that could possibly beat Canelo Alvarez. The problem with Benavidez is he seems to be, he's got no footwork. I'll go back to that. When you've got three left feet, man, you know, you ever go dancing with a girl, she steps on your foot like once, twice, three times? Well, you know, he's just not a dancer. He's not a guy that's got good footwork. Hector thinks he can be tweaked. Okay? Eddie Croft doesn't think so. So we've got two different trainers, two different guys I think have world-class abilities, two different guys that have trained world-class fighters, and both of them think different things. They both think they've got bad footwork, but Hector thinks he can be taught. Eddie doesn't think so, and Eddie thinks he's not conditioned properly. Eddie doesn't think he's dedicated. So, you know, we'll hear from Eddie next week. But the bottom line is he is 25-0. He is cocky. He is tall. He does punch in bunches, and I got to give him credit, man. He's still undefeated, so say what you want about him. But David Benavidez, a pretty good fight. Is he a punk? Somebody sent me a text just now. Is he a punk? What do I mean by that? And I sent back another text. What do you mean by a punk? In other words, like a street thug, like a punk, this and that. Because, you know, he drops a lot of F-bombs in his interviews. Yeah, I found that out. We're editing you on right now. But the bottom line is, you know, I don't know if he's a punk. You know, boxers for the most part aren't college educated, with the exception of James Bonecrusher Smith, who when he fought Mike Tyson was James Bonehugger Smith. But James Bonecrusher Smith, I think, was the only heavyweight champion, the only heavyweight title holder from the United States with a college degree. I think the Klitschkos had college degrees, but then again, the Klitschkos are from the Ukraine, and Bonecrusher Smith was the only U.S. heavyweight champion to attain a college education. So what I'm trying to tell you is that guys aren't that skilled. I mean, they're just not that skilled in worldly affairs and know how to handle themselves, okay? And Dave Benavides figures that, you know, if I come off tough and acting like a rugged guy and this and that, that'll enhance my reputation with the boxing fans. It may, but the bottom line is you've got to put up in the ring. And I think you need a couple more fights before you even think about Canelo Alvarez, before you even think talking about Canelo Alvarez. Because if you come into the fight like you did last night, in the condition you were in last night, and with the same footwork you had last night, Canelo will stop you inside the distance. I mean, there would be no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I mean, you know, he would take it to you. He would beat your arm to death. He would beat your body to death. And before 8 or 9 rounds, you'd be looking for a place to go. That O would definitely be gone. If you fought Canelo right now, that O would be gone. So what I'm trying to tell you, Mr. Benavides, and I know you're probably not going to listen, you're trying to rush into this Canelo fight as soon as possible. And if I was Canelo, I would take this fight as soon as possible. I would take him next, because I'd rather have him green without footwork than have him lumped, than have him schooled later on with footwork. Okay, just don't want to go there. I really don't want to go there. I mean, I would want him right now. Much like Canelo Alvarez was taken on by Floyd Mayweather back when Canelo had 3 left feet. I mean, Canelo was like plodding around when he fought Mayweather. He had 2-3 left feet, 4 left feet. I mean, he couldn't dance at all. But the bottom line is he's improved his footwork significantly. In fact, all aspects of Canelo Alvarez under the team of Eddie Reynoso, they've improved. They've tweaked him almost to perfection. I mean, come on. He's lost the one fight to Mayweather. Outside of that, it wasn't anything close except for that first fight with Gennady Golovkin. Of course, Golovkin, the only guy on Golovkin's resume that has beaten him was Canelo Alvarez in the second fight. And that one draw on Triple G's record, that was with Canelo as well. So speaking of Triple G, instead of coming back and wanting to get that big money fight with Canelo Alvarez, I don't know what's going on with this guy, but I think he's trying to take the low road. When I say the low road, I mean he's going to Japan. In December 29th, he's going to take on Kyoto Murata. Okay, Kyoto Murata, not much. I was going to say something really nasty about him right then and there, but I'm not going to do that. But he can't fight. He just can't fight. I mean, he can't. He couldn't win the Golden Gloves. In other words, if you put him in the Golden Gloves over here and you said to me, Pete, I want you to train a guy to beat him, I'd go out there, I'd get somebody to beat him, I think, pretty easy. I just don't think he's got any skills whatsoever. I think he's a big guy. I think the Japanese, he's a big middleweight. And the Japanese, you know, put it this way, anybody over there that can spell fight, Japanese fans like. They just do. I mean, they're invested into their losers. They're heavily invested in guys that get lumped up, the Warriors. They're big into that Warrior stuff. I'm not into Warriors. I'm into winners. I mean, I don't want to sound like a Donald Trump or anything like that, but I'm into winners. Guys that lose, what can I say? You know, that's it happens. I lost a lot of fights, but it happens. You lose fights. I understand that. But it's the way you handle losses in which you, the way you handle losses after losing determines on what you're going to become as a fighter. And I remember losing that first fight with Eddie Smith, of course, and I didn't get tired too many times after. Although I did get tired a couple times afterward, I didn't get tired too many times after that. But you have to learn. There has to be a moment in your life where you have to learn. And I think Canelo learned with Mayweather. Of course, you know, Mayweather's talking all kinds of smack. I beat Canelo, yeah, but you beat him when he was green as guacamole. And that's putting it lightly, okay? Fight him now? Floyd, no. It wouldn't even be close. Of course, I'm not even talking about the current weight. Of course, at 168 pounds now, Canelo Alvarez probably, without a doubt, pound for pound the king. And somebody said to me the other day, who could he beat at 168 in history? Who are the great 168-pounders? Well, there's only one great, maybe two great super middleweights in time. And they were, of course, Joe Calzaghe, who retired undefeated from Wales. Of course, Pat Lawler fought him, and he was a left-hander. Pat fought him about like his 7th or 8th fight, and Pat and I were always tight. You know, I mean, we We did a lot of cannabis together. Anyway, but Pat comes back from fighting from Calzaghe. He's like 3 days later, and he's still in a fog. He still is buzzed. His head's still buzzed. And I said to him, "What's up?" He goes, "That's the hardest I've ever been hit in my life." And I said, "Whoa." And then afterwards, after that, you know, he sparred with Duran and guys like that, and he beat Duran on that controversial shoulder fight. But the bottom line is he sparred with some monsters, okay? And he still told me at the end of the day, Calzaghe hit the hardest. And why did Calzaghe hit the hardest? Because Joe was a puncher early on before he hurt his hands, plus the fact he was punching from the opposite side. When you get hit by a southpaw and you don't – you just – listen, I trained one time – thinking I was going to fight a left-hander, and I fought a left-hander, and I thought I was all prepared for it, and guess what? I got licked like a stamp. I mean, he should have been arrested for domestic violence. I'm talking about Ernie Chavez. Of course, he was at one point ranked like top three or four here in the United States as a welterweight. I took him on in the National Golden Gloves down there in Las Vegas at 141 pounds. What's a few pounds? I can give up a few pounds, right? He was so big, I didn't recognize him. I didn't. I went to the guy in my corner and said, "That ain't him." He had a haircut, and he shaved. That ain't the guy. What do you mean that ain't the guy? That's got to be his. But they put his brother in. That's what I was saying. I really thought they put his brother in there because the physical difference from when we weighed in, when he was steam coming off his body, to now was like light years, okay? He went from 147 to 166. Whoa. So we weighed 166 pounds when we stepped in the ring. And of course, you know, I said to him, I said, "Well, so what? He's a big fat guy. I'll take care of this guy. Right? No problem." And for the most part, I boxed well in the first round for like 2 minutes and 20 seconds until I dipped that left jab. And he was waiting for me. He timed it. More power to him, okay? He timed it. I threw the left jab out there, and I sort of lagged bringing it back, brought him back low. He hooked around it, hit me with a right hook on the side of the head. I'd never been hit by a hook like that ever in my life. So I sort of know what Pat Lawler was talking about when he got hit the hardest by Joe Calzaghe, who wasn't that great of a puncher. But the bottom line is you're getting hit from sides. You've never been hit there before, for the most part. Not like that. Not in combination by a southpaw. So getting hit by southpaws right now, of course, we've got lots of fighters that think they're southpaws, guys that want to convert themselves, of course, you know. But the greatest, I think, of all time, as far as pound-for-pound southpaws were concerned, as far as boxers were concerned, I think I have to go back to the 1984 Olympic gold medalist to talk about Pernell Whitaker. I mean, Pernell was, they called him Sweet Pea. He beat Oscar De La Hoya in that fight. Absolutely no doubt about it. I remember engaging De La Hoya's promoter, Bob Arum's stepson, can't remember his name right now, Bob Arum's stepson, after the fight and telling him, you know, there's no way Oscar won that fight. He got knocked down. He got clowned the whole nine yards. And, like, they were, like, aghast that I would even say that before the press conference, you know. But I went out there and I told it like it was. I didn't think Oscar beat Pernell that night. In fact, I thought Pernell deserved a rematch. But, you know, the boxing establishment, Pernell had cocaine problems. Pernell was rumored to be on the Colombian dust before the fight, during the fight, and after the fight. There was a time there when he wasn't on the dust, I think, the Colombian dust. That's what I call it, cocaine. Anyway, there was a time there when he wasn't on the nose candy, I'm told. But the bottom line is he had a problem, and I think the boxing establishment sort of screwed him there. And then they screwed him again in the Chavez fight. Because think about this. I mean, he schooled Julio Cesar Chavez. I mean, he just schooled him. It was like 8 rounds to 4, maybe 9 rounds to 3 or something like that. It was a 12-round fight. In fact, it was such a one-sided fight that, you know, I was betting with Jack Tatum, number 32. They call me Assassin of the Oakland Raiders, of course, a Hall of Famer in the NFL. I was with him watching the fight. And after like 8 or 9 rounds, I just went and gave Jack my $50. We bet $50 on the fight. I took Chavez and he took Whitaker, okay? So after the fight was announced as a draw, I went back and got my money back from Jack. And he said, "You got the audacity to come back here. You know Whitaker won that fight." And yes, Whitaker did win that fight. But guess what? Instead of getting the elevator, Sweet Pea got the shaft, not once but twice in the biggest fights of his life. Shame on the boxing establishment. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Tower to the break. Gentle sway, and I knew right from the start, she was the one who could calm my heart. I know someday that we could happen in a special way. I wish I may.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I watched a scary ladies fight last week. scary ladies fight? Does that make sense to anybody? Bottom line is this young lady by the name of Alicia Bumgarner. Yikes! I mean, yikes. She's from Michigan, and she, wow, she took on Terry Harper, and she, like, almost killed Terry Harper in four rounds. Terry Harper was a standing corpse. What I mean by that is she was a vertical corpse. She was knocked out. She was standing up. She couldn't fall. The bottom line is the referee jumped in there and stopped at the right time in the fourth round. But Alicia Bumgarner, now 11-1, 7 KOs. Watch for her on the boxing horizon. Now, some big boxing upset. Take that back. One fight that wasn't an upset last night. William Zabeda, now 24-0, 22 KOs. Punished John Moralde. This guy looks like he's pretty good. He is the WBA Continental America's champion at 135 pounds, but a good-looking fighter, no doubt about that, in my mind. Now, the upset of the weekend, no doubt about that, a huge upset. 35-year-old former IBF super bantamweight, 122-pound title holder, Kiko Martinez, now 43-10-2. Two draws with 30 KOs. Brutally knocked out IBF featherweight champion and hometown hero, Kid Galahad. That was in the UK last night in the sixth round, of course, Saturday night in Sheffield, the UK. Galahad won the first four rounds easily, but got dropped in the fifth round. And by the end of round five, he was sort of toast. He got laid out in the sixth round end. And Galahad was a 7-1 betting favorite. So guess what? That's good. I think upsets are great for boxing because, you know, you don't know until the guys step into the ring. I mean, think about Buster Douglas, James Buster Douglas, and Mike Tyson. I mean, the only one that gave Buster Douglas a chance here was maybe me. And who was the other boxing writer from Ron Borges? Ron Borges bet money on him. But the reason why I gave him a chance because he was challenging for the heavyweight championship. Okay, so I interviewed him. People say to me, you're wasting your time talking to that guy. And guess what? He tended to be in the heavyweight champion of the world, so I didn't waste my time. If a guy fights for the heavyweight title and he's challenging, he deserves some press, no doubt about that. Speaking of press, stay tuned for hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Looks like I've got the Twitch thing together as far as the sound and all that kind of stuff, good stuff is concerned. It's been a pain in the butt. But the bottom line is hour number two, forthcoming. We'll hear from Alexis Arguello, the great Alexis Arguello, of course, one of my heroes in the world of boxing, no doubt about that. Stay tuned for Ring Talk Live Worldwide after the news.